And welcome to the August 20th meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Good afternoon, everyone. We have a single item on the council calendar, which I will ask Carl to read in a moment. But just basic ground rules, like I can iterate at the beginning of every council session. If you're here to testify on this item, there's a possibility of signing up to do so, and please exercise that and let our council clerk know if you want to speak. We actually have some invited testimony on this particular item, and those folks will be called first and given 5 minutes. I think given the number of people here, otherwise we'll probably limit individual testimony to 2 minutes each, just so we can hear everyone. On the subject of hearing everyone, we want to make sure we follow the rules of decorum in this chamber. So if you hear an opinion you agree with and want to indicate that, feel free to give them a thumbs up or a wave of the hand. And if you disagree with them, feel free to give them a thumbs down or some other polite hand gesture. But we ask that we not make vocal demonstrations in favor or against our fellow citizens' points of view in this room so that we get to hear all of them. If you are here on behalf of an organization or a registered lobbyist, make sure you disclose that because the law requires it. And with that, I think I will ask Carla to read the item and we'll begin.
Item 871, accept the private for hire transportation innovation task force recommendations on taxis and transportation network companies final report.
Thank you very much. I'll make a couple comments, turn it over to Commissioner in charge of transportation, Commissioner Novick, to do the same, and then we'll start calling on the folks that we have for invited testimony. Well, again, we'll follow that with public testimony. Appreciate the good work that the task force has done. Look forward to hearing from you this afternoon. The goals remain, I think, the same, which is give people transportation options, make sure that the system is safe, make sure the consumer is protected, provide service to people with disabilities, and create a playing field that's fair and open for competition. I hope that we're achieving all those goals, and I look forward to hearing from you and from the community about whether we are or what we need to change in order to get there from here. So, again, I want to thank you, Commissioner Novick, and the task force for the report this afternoon. Look forward to hearing it. Commissioner Novick.
I also want to thank the task force. Jim Owens told me the other day that he thinks that task force members have put in combined something like 700 hours working on these issues. And that's extraordinary, particularly given that we didn't start meeting until this year. So I'm just amazed, delighted, and everlastingly grateful to the task force for all of the thought and work they have put into this process. I am going to put the cart before the horse a bit, because I want to, for those people who, I could make these next comments at the end of these proceedings, but for the benefit of people who can't stay all the way through, I want to identify some issues that to me remain open. And some of these are issues where the task force has already made a recommendation or decided not to make a recommendation, but they're issues which I still want to explore. One is the issue of the level of insurance coverage. Under the pilot, we require TNCs to carry primary coverage as soon as the app is on, but before they've accepted a ride, a level of insurance which is much more than is required of a regular citizen, a non-commercial citizen, but much less than is required at all times of the taxis. Then once a ride is accepted, we require the TNCs to have to carry more insurance coverage than the taxis are required to have. I am not sure that we have struck the right balance there. I want to explore options for modifications to the insurance requirements. I actually recently asked the taxi companies, the TNCs say that in period one, they do not present that great of a risk to people, because half the time, some of the time they might be just sort of sitting at home drinking coffee with the app on. And I said to the taxi companies, maybe there's the same argument for some periods of time for taxis, that sometimes somebody's in a coffee shop waiting for a call. So could the taxi cabs develop an argument for sort of their equivalent of period one, where they carry a lower level of insurance? And the taxi companies weren't particularly interested in that, so I don't want to explore that further. But I think that there might be other options to modify the insurance requirements. On surge pricing, the task force is going to recommend no limitations on pricing. I am somewhat uneasy with the idea of the possibility of surge pricing during hours when there might be no other means of transportation available, like between 2 and 6 in the morning. So I want us to think about the possibility of having limits or prohibitions on surge pricing in the wee hours. The TNCs have said that they actually don't do surge pricing there anyway, so that probably shouldn't matter very much to them, except sort of as a matter of principle. An issue of concern to me is the fact that some taxi companies purchased WAVE vehicles in recent months or years in order to comply with our 20% fleet requirement. And they have argued that it's unfair to ask us to spend money in a requirement and then immediately repeal the requirement. I think that that is a legitimate fairness concern. I mean, on the one hand, government regulations change to the disadvantage of people who are investing in previous versions of those regulations all the time. So I don't think that we should always compensate people whenever they're injured by a change in regulations. But I have to say that this is an argument that kind of tears at my heartstrings a bit. So I'd like to analyze the possibility of some sort of compensation for taxi companies in that position. And I've asked the companies to identify what the level of their recent expenditures have been. Then, as you know, one of my concerns about this whole industry is that we've got most drivers classified as independent contractors, which means the companies are not contributing to Social Security, aren't providing workers' comp, aren't providing unemployment insurance, aren't paying minimum wage. I have asked both the taxi companies and the TNCs and drivers to recommend, and also, by the way, I've asked the AFL-CIO to think about what protections could the city offer by regulation to drivers that we wouldn't be preempted by state or federal law from offering. And I've received some thoughts about that, nothing that I feel is actionable yet, but I'm going to continue to explore that. And that's one of the reasons I want to continue the pilot for a while rather than adopt final regulations. Finally, I want to mention that we are going to be stepping up our game on monitoring and enforcement, particularly on operations. And specifically, I want to note that on WAVE service, the TNCs, I think, have made a commitment to WAVE service in Portland. They haven't made in any other city. And they've been making progress towards compliance with WAVE service requirements. But so far, it hasn't been enough. And based on our recent data, a significant period of time, WAVE vehicles are unavailable. So I do want to put the TNCs on notice that 24/7 citywide service is a requirement, including that requirement for WAVE vehicles, and we are going to have to start assessing penalties if we don't see full compliance. And by the way, historically, we have not really tracked compliance with the taxi cabs of that requirement either. We're going to be stepping up our monitoring of that for taxi cabs as well. So those are the issues that, to me, remain open. And I will now shut up and let the task and first hear from Jody Yates from PBOT.
Yeah. Can I just ask you just a procedural question? Because some of the issues that you've identified are issues of concern to other of your colleagues. Today we are technically accepting a report.
Exactly.
Which sometimes gets politicized in this body, but to put a fine point on it, a citizen group has issued a report and we are going to accept it. We accept it whether we agree with the recommendations or not. We accept it whether we think it's been edited correctly. We accept it generally because a citizen group has given us a report, and it's a courtesy that we extend to formally receive it. But I understand the experimental period has been extended by administrative rule 120 days. So for purposes of what you want to accomplish today, to the extent any of us have concerns along the lines that you've mentioned in those categories or others, what is the most constructive thing we can do today to build a record around those issues, and what do you anticipate as action items going forward?
I think the most constructive thing is to ask questions that you have, that you think, particularly questions which you think is really important to ask in a public forum. So I made the statement I just made, precisely to address the issue you raised about when we accept a report, sometimes people get the impression that that means that that's the end of it and we are implementing all those recommendations. So I just wanted to state for the record there's some issues I wanted to continue to explore. I think that it might be useful if my colleagues sort of did the same and say, these are issues which I want to continue to explore.
And again, I just want to put a fine point on it because this has come up when we've had reports on issues ranging from the Joint Terrorist Task Force to other kinds of things. In general, it's the tradition of this body to accept reports furnished to us by citizen committees, whether individually we agree with all the recommendations or not. So as Commissioner Novick just noted, it is not a statement, a blanket acceptance of all the recommendations. It is literally transmitting it from the citizen group to the city, because we're not being asked today to vote on final rules. We're being asked today to continue to evaluate the information we're getting during this test period. And at some later date, the council will have a formal vote. Did I say that correctly, Commissioner?
Exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah, so it would probably be good for both the public and for us as we go along, for Ms. Treat and Jody and others to articulate what are the areas where the council will return to changing regulations based on the report, or where you may have the administrative authority to proceed, but council members in the community might want you to do more work. So it'd be good for that, for people to understand where some of these issues, how and when some of these issues are going to come back to council for actual legislative action. Okay, good. Thank you for that discussion. I hope that helps clarify this for everyone. Let me call on Jody Yates from PBOT to come up with a staff presentation, please.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Jody Yates. I'm with the Bureau of Transportation. I'm just here to provide a summary of the data that update from what we did in July. I think Mayor Hales and Commissioner Fish were absent, so I'll just give a brief summary of what happened in for the May and June data for you. We're receiving data from both the taxicab companies and the TNCs, and the trends remain similar from May to June. And I'll give you a quick summary. The number of trips are very similar for both months, but the distribution has changed. From May to June, the taxis provided 25% less dispatched service, and the TNCs have increased by about 30%. The TNCs provide a majority of their trips on the weekends and during evening to late hours, so the 5 p.m. to 2 a.m. Both taxicabs and TNCs are providing 24/7 service throughout the city. We are receiving trip data that shows that trips are being provided throughout the city at all hours. TNC trips are concentrated around the city center, about 75% within the 10 zip codes around the city center, and taxicabs provide a greater number of rides in the 12 of the other 32 zip codes. If you weren't aware, there are 32 zip codes within the city. Ride durations are very similar, 12 and a half minutes for taxis and 14 minutes for TNCs. They also have similar, their short distance. Both company formats are short distance during the evening and late night hours and longer during the commuting times. Wait times are very similar, similar patterns. Taxicabs were 10 minutes in May and reduced to 8 minutes in June. The TNCs remained the 5 to 6 minutes between May and June.
What was that number measuring again, those times?
The wait times. From the time you request a cab or a TNC to show up, 5 to 6 minutes for a TNC, and it was 10 minutes for cabs and reduced down to 8 minutes in June.
Do you happen to have handouts for us?
I did not have.
The report here in our.
But you have. I'm just giving a summary of the report that I think you received.
I didn't see that.
But if not, we'll provide that to you.
When we had the previous hearing, we had numbers of charts and graphs and such, which were most helpful. And it's hard for me to process when you're just giving us the numbers without having them written down.
Yeah, we can provide those to you.
Thank you.
Yep. Just almost done with the data.
I see some of them, yeah.
The peak wait time for both TNC and taxis are at 5 p.m. and 4 a.m. And for wave service, there were 550 wheelchair-accessible vehicles. Rides in June, 80% were served by taxi companies and 20% by TNCs. And the average wait time for a taxi wave was 28 and a half minutes, and a TNC wave was 12 minutes. There was a request.
Does the data on wait time change depending on when you make the appointment? In other words, if you reserve a taxi the night before to take you to the airport, does the wait time, is that different than if you call within an hour of needing service?
I'm looking at my specialist over there who did a lot of the work.
I just say anecdotally, my experience is if I schedule a car 24 hours in advance, it usually comes a little early, and so there is no wait time. But I can understand if I try to schedule a taxi, let's say an hour out, I understand that I'm now in the queue and
correct
competing with a lot of other folks.
It is my understanding that. Do you want to come up and help answer?
Well, it just. Yeah. Yeah. We can come back to it. Just
okay.
Well, there was a question last time about whether pre-scheduled rides are included in those numbers or not.
And that's what I'm trying to... They are not.
They're not, okay.
That's what she...
So this is rides called for...
For immediate...
I need a ride now.
Yes,
yeah.
Immediate dispatch.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So there was a question back in July about complaints. So for June we received a total of 6 complaints, one for an LPT, which is the like limousine or type of service. Taxis had 3, TNCs had 2. In July, we had 8 complaints, kind of a similar 3 on the LPT, 4 on taxi, TNC. And generally speaking, the complaint category is about driver safety or driving safely, whether they're driving with a handheld device or speeding, those types of complaints. And there was also one more question following up on Commissioner Fritz's. There was a request on how many vehicles were available between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. And Lyft reported that they had an average of 22 vehicles available during those times, and Uber reported that they had 140 was the average.
So those are averages. Could I see the chart over the course of the weeks as to what's the lowest and the highest number of cars they had available during those hours?
I received that for Lyft. I'll have to look back and see
definitely
if I have that for Uber.
One of the good things about this hearing is that we have another one coming up in October.
That was my final point, yeah. So thank you. Mm-hmm. And that we'll be bringing a full report to you guys on October 7th about the 120 days of data.
And if we could possibly have that report a week ahead of time, that would be very helpful.
Will do.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions on my data summary? Or
I wanted to ask Mayor and Commissioner Novick. We have Terry Williams here from the Revenue Office, and I had some questions about business license fee compliance, and I don't want to make her wait till the end of the hearing. Can she come up at this point and just give us a quick update on that?
Assuming she's ready to do that.
She's ready. She's always ready.
Generally, that's been the case with her.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jody. Thanks very much.
So, yes, if you could just update us on business license compliance.
Sure, I can do that. One of the things that I did to try to answer this question, since I was given an idea that you were going to be asking, was I did look at our new business list that we generate on a monthly basis and looked at 3 categories of NAICS codes, or that's a national code that identifies a business type. That would include taxi, private for hire, drivers where they would be selecting for registration. They included other services, and I only know in other services that I've gotten some additional information about what that looks like. Taxi service, and then we added a new one, private for hire transportation. So beginning in March, it was very small. We had like maybe 10 with that. In April, that increased to 462 registrations. In May, that increased to 519 registrations. In June, to 738 registrations. And then July, 865. So that's over 2,500 new registrations. Now that, I don't know who that was for. That could be a taxi cab driver. That could be a TNC driver. That could be a limited passenger transportation driver. But that's a significant increase in registrations with the business taxes.
And that was under the private for hire category?
Either other services that gave some indication that they were a driver based on a business name or something, taxi service or private for hire transportation service. So
your sense is?
We've gotten a lot of registrations. And I also can tell you anecdotally that our phones have been ringing for folks registering online, wanting assistance, wanting to get their certificate of compliance so that they can complete the process.
Okay. Harry, can I piggyback off that and just ask you, what tools do we have to verify that the folks that are advertising on the internet platforms are only people that that have obtained their business license.
I don't know what the platforms are using for information that they have to advertise, but if they were to include their business license tax account number, that would tell you that they've registered. Well, so they have that number.
Let me flip it around. Have okay. Uber and Lyft confirmed with you that 100% of the people that have access to their platform have in fact demonstrated that they're licensed?
I'm not in contact with Uber or Lyft. That's all going through PBOT. But I understand that they cannot drive until they've got their registration with us. And so that's why I know the drivers have been very insistent upon getting that printed certificate of compliance to show that they have registered.
How often do the taxi companies pay their business income tax?
The taxi companies pay on an annual basis based on their fiscal year end. So generally, if you've got a calendar December year end, you're going to have the tax return that's due on April 15th of every year. If you're not ready to file it by then you can get an extension of time to file, which would be October 15th.
So do most of them run on the calendar year rather than on the fiscal year?
Most individuals are going to be on a calendar year. If you're a corporation, you've got some choices in your fiscal year end. Other than that, unless you select it or you can be a business that has one, it would be December, yes.
So I'm asking about the existing taxi cab companies. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do all of them use the calendar year, or do they have a fiscal year that might have ended in June 30th?
I don't know off the top of my head which ones have what fiscal year they could have.
If you could check, please, because mm-hmm. one of the things I'm interested in is the loss in business income tax revenue to the city
okay.
compared with last year. So if there are any that file based on the fiscal year ending in June 30th, mm-hmm. we would be able to look at their income for this past year and compare it with the previous year to see what the impact both on their income and consequently on ours would be. Similarly, if there are any by the time we get to October whose fiscal year ends in September,
okay.
I'm trying to gauge how much lost. You know, with Airbnb, we were getting income, so that was a with this, it seems likely that we're going to lose a significant amount of revenue, and I'm interested to try to find out how much.
Okay. We can do an analysis in an overall potential sense because individual financial data is confidential, so we can only do perhaps a percentage change or something like that.
Right.
Okay.
But I'm assuming that most of the part-time Uber and Lyft drivers are not going to reach the $50,000 income threshold to pay as any tax at all.
It would depend upon if that driver also had a business license tax because of another business that they had, then that would be combined and it might put it over. So it's really hard to say.
So if they were self-employed altogether.
Right, a consultant or did something else or whatever, then the combined could put it over and therefore have to report.
So it's not per business, it's not per license, it's per individual.
No, it's per individual and how you file your taxes. So if you file a joint return and you have a rental income, you have a consulting business that you file on your Schedule C and then became a driver, that would all be on one tax return and one filing. So all of those gross receipts could be over the $50,000 and therefore you would pay based on that.
Do we give these newly registered drivers that information? Are they aware of those rules?
We send them a welcome kit. We have information on our page, but we haven't sent out special notices to say, hey, you have to file. We do that in January of every year before filing to let them know that they have a tax obligation in that and they have to file a return.
So if they had previously had a business license for, say, having a rental property, would they have to get another one for driving for Uber and Lyft?
No, they would use the same account number that they had for that rental property or that other business.
Okay. So we might think about at the end of this calendar year, including in your packet that goes out, particularly to these newly registered TNC drivers, information letting them know that they may have a tax obligation that they didn't have before.
Yes, we can certainly do that.
You want to add some things?
Just a quick comment about the business licensing confirmation. We did do a specific audit around business licenses, and we audited about 30% of the drivers, and we found over 99% compliance, and only one case where we had to ask for the driver to be removed from the platform.
But that's based on the information that the companies gave us. right? We don't know if there were other drivers.
We were able to confirm the driver, the business license number on our own.
Right, but that was based on the identification of the driver given to you by the companies. There may be other drivers out there that they haven't reported to us, and therefore we don't know that whether they got a license or not.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you both. Let's move on to the task force itself and ask Mike Greenfield and Jim Owens to come up, and along with other task force members, as you see fit. So. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Greenfield. I'm the chair of the task force, and members of our task force include Joe Vanderveer, and with the others, please raise your hand. And we've certainly been meeting frequently, as Commissioner Novick suggested, but I understand that among venues to get sympathy for being in long meetings, this may be not a good one. And I think Jim now has...
Oh, PowerPoint. All right. There we go.
So I'm going to be very brief and just touch on process. And in your introductory remarks, Mr. Mayor, you already spoke to the charge of the group. A reminder that in phase one, you asked us to focus on mandated criteria, insurance, inspections, background checks for TNCs and taxis, essentially a short-term fix. And in phase two, you asked us to take a comprehensive view of the entire private-for-hire transportation program, address issues that we didn't have an opportunity to do so in phase one, and to reconsider the issues that we did address. I don't think I need to run through the principles again. Again, they've been articulated already in your opening remarks, and they'll be touched upon as we explain some of the recommendations. In terms of the process, we have had to date 13 task force meetings, and in the second phase, we broke up into three subcommittees, given the breadth of issues we were addressing. And in those subcommittees, we invited the active participation of the taxi companies and TNC companies, drivers, accessible service advocates and providers and experts, and Travel Portland. And it made a big difference to have those folks at the table working with us to develop recommendations. And as Commissioner Novick noted, we're close to 700 hours of volunteer service. We're walked in today with 670 hours. Depending on how long this goes today, we'll get there. And just very briefly, the scope of the recommendations that are in front of you. We are addressing taxis and TNCs. We are not forwarding at this point in time recommendations regarding the LPTs, limited passenger transportation, the limousines, town cars, shuttles, pedicabs, horse-drawn carriages. We will be back to you in September with recommendations on that aspect of the private-for-hire transportation program. And again, we had three subcommittees. We had one on operational considerations. We had one on accessibility considerations and one on market and program considerations. And at this point, I'm going to turn it over to our chair.
Thank you. I'd like to speak to two or three issues that I think brought us the most attention, some of which Commissioner Novick has referred to, characterize generally what we've done, and then Joan, the Vice Chair, will go through the specifics. Let me talk about data. Prior to the pilot period, there was really not a collection of data that would be useful for comparison purposes. Probably sometime in the future, after you have approved some final regulatory structure, there will be some very useful data. The data that we now have is a slice of information which may be useful for general kinds of conclusions. But in advance of the eruption of the volcano near Pompeii, you probably could have gotten a pretty good view of what that city was like. And later on, you probably could get another good view. If you took a gathered data during the eruption, it probably wouldn't be that useful. And this is a pretty big eruption in the TNC and the transportation and taxi venue. And so I'd be careful about getting down to the micro conclusions from this particular slice of data, because it's right in the middle of a big change that's going on. Certainly in the dynamic entrepreneurial and technical environment that we're living in, the city of Portland can't maintain a regulatory structure that is static. Updating the regulatory structure doesn't require, I think, a change in the policy objectives of the council. The task force is recommending a regulatory structure that reflects your charge to the task force and the policy priorities you articulated when we talked with you in April. Briefly, insurance. Insurance we spend a lot of time on, and it certainly is a cost of doing business, and it is coverage for potential injured parties. We got as close to parity as we could in the current insurance market. In our recommendations, you'll find that we are recommending that you leave the latitude for PBOT to continue to examine the insurance market and work toward more parity as more insurance products become available. We also, after a lot of anecdotal testimony, made pretty clear that the taxis and TNCs would have to be the primary insurers in all three of the time categories, and we are recommending that you insist that paper copies of insurance certificates from the companies also be carried in the car.
Can I just jump in on that one
Yes.
point? It's my understanding now that that in fact, in practice, the commercial insurance is not the primary insurance, and it may be that the personal automobile insurance is the primary, and with the commercial insurance as the backup. Am I correct on that?
It isn't. I don't think it's as clear as that. It certainly wasn't to the task force, but what we're recommending is that the insurance, the commercial insurance, be the primary insurance in all three periods.
And I think it's helpful at this point, like, if you just in very succinctly and plainly explain why having the commercial insurance be the primary insurance is in the best interest of the consumer.
Well, it is. I think there, if in the event that there's an accident, we heard a lot of testimony about actual accidents during the pilot period, and a lot of confusion on the part of the drivers about which insurance policy should be primary and where to make the claim. If it's crystal clear to drivers who it is that they pass the claim on to, that will expedite settlement of the claim.
And so I'm not an expert on insurance law, but if you spend the first year arguing about who's primary and secondary, which policy does or doesn't apply, whether there's been a breach of any policy, and on, what happens is the person that we're hoping to compensate for their injuries is left in limbo.
Yes.
So having clarity about
that's right.
who's primarily responsible ensures that the consumer or the victim in an accident is compensated more quickly, and there's some consistency in coverage.
Exactly. And so that's why we're recommending that in the regulatory structure you make clear that the primary insurance is from the company, not the personal insurance.
And since I think you're going to find broad agreement here on that point, why, in your judgment, if we're going to make the insurance, the commercial insurance primary, why not also just mandate the same level of insurance at each of the different stages?
We heard information that due to the two different business models, that's not available given how those distinct business models operate. I don't understand it really much better than that. And so what we've suggested is that when and if that becomes available, that PBOT be given the authority to bring that into parity.
I'm going to defer to Commissioner Fritz on this broader subject because it's something she's passionate about. But
sure.
I am just going to offer you a homey metaphor. If you have a small business and you come in at 7 to set up for the 9 o'clock opening, we typically don't view 7 to 9 as someone not being involved in a commercial activity. And it just seems that there's a certain common sense view on this that the moment you are in any way involved in a commercial activity, it's harder to make harder to justify a distinction in terms of behavior, and particularly hard to justify if there's a victim, if there's someone who's been harmed in stage 1 versus 2 or 3. So Commissioner Fitz feels very strongly about that, and I will join her in those concerns, but I just want to preview that point.
Sure.
I find it really interesting that you were told that the insurance is not available. You can buy insurance for anything. David Beckham had his right leg insured. So I just, it's not credible that you can't buy insurance for that period. The taxi companies have it covered whether they're sitting in a coffee shop or not. Did you find that credible?
We didn't question the credibility of it. What we did was to say that your administrators in PBOT can sort that out, and if it's possible to do it, that they should do it.
And I am assuming that you would support the council if we say, we don't care how you do it, just do it. You need to be at the commercial level, that would be something the task force would support.
I would support the council in any way it chooses to act.
Thank you very much.
Chair Greenfield, I do want to ask the director. Do you think that there's an argument or a strong argument for having different levels of insurance in period 1 versus 2 and 3?
Speaking for myself, no.
Yeah, and I think what you said earlier about the beauty of a bright line on primary insurance, that the commercial insurance is primary, I think there is a certain elegance in having consistency along, from beginning to end in terms of insurance coverage. And I have no doubt that it is within our authority to mandate both.
And I should say that very recently I had a conversation with some representatives of the insurance industry, and I asked them, would it be possible for people to buy insurance at higher levels for period 1 than they are getting now for the TNCs? And they said that they thought it should be possible, although obviously they knew the TNCs wouldn't like it. But that's based on a conversation with two representatives of the insurance industry.
Thank you, sir.
I think insurance companies are anxious, particularly with large potential customers, to offer the products that they're required to have.
Okay.
Joe Vandeveer will give a more complete discussion on the wheelchair-accessible vehicle topic. What we've done is to, rather than have an implicit subsidy for those vehicles, so if you have a company that has 50 vehicles and you give a wave ride, the other 49 vehicles are subsidizing that. What we've done is suggest a more explicit subsidy, which collects a per-ride charge and then explicitly subsidizes those rides, which then is an encouragement to give good service rather than a sort of a disincentive to give good service. And we work closely with Nicole, Joe, and other members of the Accessibility Committee, and we use the Lewis and Clark study metrics for setting standards, and then suggested the explicit subsidy idea. On the status of drivers, drivers as independent contractors predates the arrival of TNCs into Oregon. That was the case for most companies prior to their arrival. On the advice of the city attorney, we recognize the issues within the authority of the BOLI director. However, we've recommended that in the absence of BOLI action, the city pursue options for obligating taxis and TNCs to pay for benefits such as work-related disability insurance.
Mr. Chairman, as a practical matter, isn't it likely that the first time this is going to be tested is when someone either asserts a claim or exercises a right claiming to be an employee and some administrative agency has to resolve that question? Like, for example, a group of people get together and say, we want to organize. We're employees. We want the protections of the National Labor Relations Act. Or someone brings a claim under some statute that provides a benefit to employees. And somewhere along the line, someone's going to have to determine whether they're employees or independent contractors.
In my experience, government plays catch-up with the private sector. And so what we've got now is either an employee or a contractor based on a model that is, you know, decades old. And so now government, in my opinion, has to catch up with the new reality, the sharing economy, the enthusiasm of employers to define workers as contract workers. And so I think this is not certainly isolated to Portland, but I think on a national level, at some juncture, government will catch up to the new reality and perhaps have some sort of a modified category.
I think it is worth noting, although we're getting ahead of ourselves in terms of a later subject, under federal law, and particularly under the Americans with Disabilities Act, it does not matter whether you're classified as an independent contractor or an employee. There is coverage under that federal
right.
law. So it's often specific to the regulation or the law, but at some point an administrative body is going to decide this, and I suspect my own guess is it'll happen the minute a handful of people decide they want to try to organize or exercise any federal or state right, and then someone is going to have to decide the question of whether their employees are independent contractors.
There is always an ignition point. You're right. So that ends my portion, unless there's
some other questions. Mr. Vandeveer, next.
Joan Plank is next.
Oh, sorry, Joan. Go ahead, please.
Commissioners, Mr. Mayor. Mine's going to be pretty brief. Mike covered some of our areas. I know you have the full report in front of you. One of the areas that the task force is recommending, making recommendations, has to do with caps. We are recommending that there be no caps on the number of drivers or the number of vehicles permitted to operate. And I think from some of the data, albeit only a couple of months, there is a desire for more service in the city of Portland. To our knowledge, no jurisdiction has a cap in effect on the number of TNCs authorized to operate, and we didn't find a rational basis to do so. We also felt that if TNCs weren't going to have a cap, then cabs shouldn't have a cap. So,
As part of that discussion, did you have any thoughts about the effects on climate change of having more people driving around?
We one of the issues that we discussed had to do with just environmental impacts in general, and we had some limited information, some information from some city staff that basically said we just don't know enough about what the environmental impacts are. We're going to have to watch it over time. It's going to have to be monitored. We made some recommendations that the city might want to partner with PSU in the future to try to determine if there are issues that need to be addressed.
So we probably should do that if we adopt a future ordinance, we should start then, right? Because otherwise we wouldn't be able to see over time.
Right. Our recommendation was that the city staff try to gather data.
And contract with PSU sooner rather than
suggested
later.
Suggested that they might want to contract with PSU or another entity.
That's a good question. That data collection is not already underway, right, on the environmental issue.
The city has limited data on, I think, effects of environmental impacts of vehicles. I mean, we all know that vehicles do make a difference, and more vehicles make a difference, less vehicles make a difference. I think some of the issues that we don't know is maybe there will be fewer vehicles if more people are using taxis and TNCs. Maybe they won't be driving their cars. Some of the TNCs offer, more than one person in a vehicle. I mean, so there's just a lot of unknowns until this plays out that we don't have all the information yet.
Okay. Hey, Commissioner, I should tell you, I asked the Oregon Environmental Council this question, and they said at this point they just don't think that we know. I mean, it could be that there's fewer trips because people who would have driven to work and then driven back took transit in because they knew they could get an Uber ride back. It could be that people are taking Uber trips that otherwise would be transit trips. So it's not clear at this point what the impact is, and people around the world, I think, are trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I think since we're aiming to be innovative, we should set up a study that will find out that information.
Right. One of the other areas that we are key features of our recommendations are that the administrative responsibility for the licensing and bringing drivers into the system be shifted from the city to the private sector. With the big increase in the size of the market, and what we don't want to see is a huge new bureaucracy that's processing a bunch of paper. We think it's time to shift the responsibility for the cost of permitting from the public to the private sector. City resources need to be committed to the enhanced compliance monitoring, training, and enforcement, not administering permits.
And what would happen to the staff that are currently doing permits?
Our recommendation is that they be used that their duties shift towards the compliance monitoring and enforcement actions that need to be taken and helping the taxis and TNCs meet the necessary regulations. So they would shift from kind of pushing paper or administrative to more of an active management of the program.
So I'll be interested, Commissioner, to at the next hearing to find out a financial assessment of whether that would require changing classifications, labor impacts, because staff have a job description of doing a certain amount of something and also skills to do a certain amount of something. To ask them to do something different may involve some labor costs. So I think we should look into that.
And we certainly understand that, but we also we think that we think that staffing is an important component of making this this pilot and ultimately what you decide to undertake successful, that the proper staffing is very important. That I think some of the – I think I speak for the task force that we believe that some of the there just wasn't enough staff to take care of everything before in terms of the way the program was run, and so things didn't get done. They did the absolute best they could, but it needs to be staffed appropriately.
Right. So, again, that's going to be a general fund impact, particularly of concern to me since we won't have the taxes coming in as well.
Actually, the model that's being recommended is that the TNCs, through whatever fees they pay for drivers or vehicles or whatever the final assessment is, will cover the cost of the program. So my understanding is general fund is not – the hit, and I don't know. Are any of the staff shaking their heads behind me?
So are you recommending then a significant increase in the amount that we would charge the TNCs for being able to have their platform operative?
We haven't seen any numbers yet in terms of what it's going to take to administer the program effectively and efficiently.
But that is part of your recommendation, that should be borne by the TNCs.
Yes, and I assume just from my experience in these kinds of businesses before that the industry generally likes to have things run well and that they're generally supportive within reason of paying the fees needed to have a successful program.
Because am I remembering correctly that we just charged them $20,000 for this pilot?
I couldn't tell you what the current fees are.
That's
sorry.
The number that stuck in my head, which is clearly inadequate. So I will be interested to know how much the pilot has cost us in terms of staff time.
Okay. All right, let's turn to Mr. Vandeveer and try to keep. I'm sorry, John, am I cutting you off or are you finished?
No, I think the rest of it's been covered.
Okay.
Commissioner, I actually just do want to note that the specific language of the recommendation of the task force is utilize a sliding scale cost recovery based approach, ensuring adequate and consistent funding to implement all aspects of the private for hire transportation program, which includes the cost of monitoring and enforcement.
Okay. Mr. Vandeveer.
Right. I'm Joe Vandeveer. Is this thing on?
It will be.
Will be. Okay.
There you go.
All right, there we go. I'm Joe Vandeveer, and I'm with the Commission on Disability, and I've been involved in this process since the beginning of Phase 2, representing our commission. And I just want to say that our chair will be speaking later, and she'll speak to the recommendations that involve our commission going forward with this issue in the long term. But I'll talk about the task force recommendation and the process that got to it. When I started this, I came in and I replaced another commissioner, and I was skeptical about where this was going to go and how it was going to go as far as accessibility went. And I was pleasantly surprised. It turned out very good. Pretty much everything that I thought should be in this is in it. And so that's a very good thing. In particular, I'm happy to see that there's a switch from fleet quota to access time, because I think that's going to be a much more meaningful metric to use, and it's going to get us where we need to go, no pun intended. However, that's going to take a lot of enforcement effort and a lot of monitoring effort, and so that's one thing that really needs to happen. The incentivizing of wave service with the reimbursement from a surcharge fund is another great idea. That's a huge disincentive to the companies to provide the service in an equitable manner. The better training and communication of drivers, both for the taxis and the TNCs, is a very useful, a very needed recommendation. Effective yet good penalties. I'm not sure how to put that. I think that the penalty system that we've set up for non-compliance is very thorough, and it's effective yet not draconian in nature. And so I think that will be good. And then we put in several recommendations for different tweaks to the accessibility of vehicles, and so and parameters on those vehicles, payment systems in the cabs, things like that, methods of communication between drivers and riders and those kind of things. And so that's all very important to effective service for people with disabilities. Like I said, effective enforcement is key here. So really need to make sure that happens and that data is collected and that all of the data that we suggest is collected on the accessibility issues, because without any of those pieces, it will be difficult to assess where we're at and keep things going on the right track. And so I'm happy to say that I think service has gotten better for wheelchair users in particular. There's more waves available. As you saw in Tara's presentation, there's still a disparity. Certainly half an hour is 26 minutes for a cab is kind of a long time. So that needs to improve, but the TNCs are doing a good job. They need to build their capacity a bit, but they do a good job on the time. And so I'm happy with the way things are going. And our commission heard this issue at our last commission meeting, and we support the recommendation going forward.
Thank you. Questions?
Can I follow up on two questions off of that? The first is, in the report, at page 3, it refers to the Portland Equal Access Plan concept, and it says, we, the committee, find PEEP to be an incomplete and potentially punitive approach, but it doesn't quite explain why. Could any of you just explain generally why you came to that, how you came to that conclusion?
Want to go?
Well, incomplete in that the access time focus is a good element. That's a good thing. However, the PEEP, as I understood it, I came in after that discussion pretty much. That plan kind of called for market forces to determine what happened, and there to be extreme punitive measures for noncompliance or failure to comply. And I think that's where the incomplete comes in. And that we felt that there should be more, it shouldn't be quite so draconian, and that there should be some subsidy of wave service by the city, by the system, as opposed to forcing the companies to do or die. And so.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. And my second question, we all seem to agree on the goals, which is a fully accessible system and an equalization to the extent practicable of wait times. But we've also learned the data that we were given earlier says about 75% of the TNC rides are in the central part of the city. And we've also heard from TNC representatives that those are the most profitable rides. So do we have a concern that over time, low-income, disabled riders outside the central core are not going to get an adequate level of service?
Yeah, I would say yes, that is a concern for sure. The distribution of waves is a big issue. And so, you know, the further out you are, the longer you'll wait. I believe we at least talked about having a different access time based on location.
Yes, we did. Yeah. And that concern was raised, and there are recommendations on accessible services being available 24/7 citywide. It needs to be monitored very carefully, you know, at all hours of the day.
So I guess that leads to maybe a related question, which is the statute that we're all citing to, 16.40.270, minimum standards for service, talks about service citywide, but it doesn't define what that means. And isn't the next step here to actually put some content behind that?
I think that's right. I think to your first question, I think the explicit subsidy will make the economic difference a little less paramount in the mind of the providers. That's the sort of carrot part of the equation. The stick part of the equation is it's not optional.
Right, and I think that's the point, because, for example, someone recently took one of the apps. I don't have it on my phone. I've never used it, and showed me the wait times within the central city. But as you migrated out, the app finally just said no cars available. And I think that's exactly what we want to prevent, that we just have a system where it's separate and unequal, and we have a whole category of potential customers who happen to be low income, that i.e. more likely to be dispersed from the central core and in need of an accessible vehicle.
Well, in a moment I'll speak to enforcement, but we have to make it less profitable not to follow that rule.
There you go.
In fact, why don't you go ahead and proceed to talk about the implementation issues, and then we'll call on the first of our other panels.
When you adopt some set of regulations, when you adopt a regulatory structure, that's one of three important parts of dealing with this issue. The second element is ensuring that the city can measure industry compliance with the regulatory standards. In other words, we've said, here's how we want you to do it, and we have to be able, through the data we collect and the initiatives we take, to compare the performance to the standard. And the third element is to have the courage, administratively and politically, when it comes time to sanction companies for noncompliance. Educating companies and drivers, measuring compliance, imposing sanctions represents a workload. There is a workload associated with that. PBOT must come to you with proposals for sufficient staffing and funding to accomplish that workload, along with assessments on the industry to pay for the enforcement. Without staffing and funding, this policy structure and the objectives you're pursuing will fail. Without your approval of enforcement efforts sufficient to make compliance the most profitable option for taxis and TNC companies, whatever you finally approve will be meaningless. You have to have the courage, administratively and politically, to convince the industry that it is more profitable to comply with the standards you establish than to not follow the rules. And I say this as the previous director of many regulatory functions at the state level. No administrative person who gets appointed to be tough in enforcement can be any tougher than the elected official who appointed them. So I'm probably making that too clear. We're providing you our best collective thinking and input on the input we received. We appreciate the input from the taxis and TNC folks who sat on our subcommittees, and we really appreciate the exceptional support from PBOT staff, city attorney, commissioner's office, and your support. Thank you.
Thank you.
One last question. The last time we had a big hearing that I attended, we talked a little bit about the terms of service agreements. The boilerplate that you, by just checking online, you've agreed to the terms. And we learned that there was a lot of terms that are inconsistent with Oregon law, and they are written more for a national audience than for a local audience. Any updates you can share with us in terms of the TNCs tailoring their service agreements to actually comply with Oregon law?
I don't have any, but, you know, we'll watch with interest while the city staff make it clear.
Okay. Commissioner, we didn't revisit that in phase two.
Right, so I'll just make a note that I think a sign of good faith during this trial period is actually adapting and updating the terms of service agreements so that they are consistent with Oregon law, and that consumer is not being asked to sign onto something that has terms inconsistent with our law, which inevitably just breeds confusion and litigation.
Good.
And as I think I said to one of the representatives at a subcommittee meeting who raised, well, this is our business plan, I said, do you have a choice between sticking with the business plan and doing business here?
Well, I want to thank you all very much for all the hours and effort, along with Commissioner Novick and the rest of us. We appreciate it when citizens step up and